Phew. When you are empathic and feel everyone else's emotions through your own skin, it can be rough. Add the holidays, which, despite bringing much joy to many, also brings much stress to many. Now, imagine having everyone's stress pumping through your own body. Hello, no fun, awkward holiday parties. In this episode, I'm going to talk about what I call two vital rules for empaths and probably non-empaths alike. Knowing them will make all those festive events and beyond so much happier in your skin.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.
Do you crave clarity and insight? Do you sense that your intuition is trying to tell you important things, but you have a hard time trusting it? Do you want access to your own internal wisdom and to understand how it operates so that you can guide your life in ways that are meaningful and satisfying? Well then, welcome. I'm glad you are here. I'm your host, Aimée Cartier. I've been a professional psychic since around 2007. I'm the author of the book, Getting Answers, Using Your Intuition to Discover Your Best Life. I've been teaching others to understand and use their own intuitive and empathic abilities for more than a decade. Join me each week for true stories and tools that will inspire you to take seriously your own inner knowing, that internal sense that you have uniquely tailored to you and designed to not only set you on the roads that are best for you, but also help you avoid the ones that are treacherous. It's time for you to own your intuition.
Hi, welcome again. This is Aimée Cartier, psychic, author, intuitive guide, and the host of the Own Your Intuition show. Each week, I get a little report of how many of you are downloading my podcast, and that doesn't even count the number of you who are listening to it on the Voice of Ash on Radio. It makes me so happy. I feel you all over the world turning into what I'm putting out here. So I'm sending all of you a little ethereal hug / love from me. Thank you for tuning in. And if you love what you hear here, would you be willing to give me a 5-star rating, if that's how you feel, of course, on wherever you get your podcasts? Because it helps other people find the Own Your Intuition show. And, of course, tell your friends. Pretty please. As you know, I relish your comments. A special shout out this week to Molly, who wrote me to say, I have listened to almost every one of your podcasts. I adore them. I marinate in your voice and wisdom on my drives to and from work, which gives me a good place to start from each day and a soul-nourishing half hour just for me and reminders about my empathic nature and the powers of my intuition. I shared it with my sister and she also loves it. She bought the Inner GPS book and is all fired up. You are making a difference and helping people. And I'm so excited for you to find a wider audience. Thank you for your work and all that you embody and do. Thank you, Molly, for taking the time to share that with me. It means the world. Okay, so let's get started. Today, we are continuing our discussion on empathic nature, specifically diving into what I call two vital rules for empaths, in the hope that they will help you, empaths, and maybe even you non-empathic people as you navigate your holidays with ease. When I was in the Peace Corps in Senegal, like most volunteers, I lived in a village. In my village, I had a hut with a thatched roof. In that hut, I had a bed. In the backyard of my hut, I had a hole in the ground for going to the bathroom. If you were outside, excepting that concrete portion that held my hole for a toilet, the ground was sand or dirt. There was no pavement around. Mine may have been the only concrete slab in the village. I can't really remember. I lived within a Senegalese family compound, more precisely a Poular Fouta family, which is an ethnic group in Senegal who originate in Guinea. My hut had no electricity, no running water. We were lucky because our well was within the family compound, which was an area fenced off by a grass fence. So we didn't have to walk to it. Within the compound, we had a tree, another lucky thing, for shade. Underneath the tree, we had a couch. Just kidding. We had no couch. We had a platform about waist high that was made out of about 6 to 8 medium-sized tree trunks. The tree trunks weren't flush with each other, so there were holes in between each one of the trees, to my memory. It was maybe 6 or 4 feet. That was our living room, so to speak. The place we hung out during the day and night, the place we would crouch on to eat, all out of one big bowl with our hands, as is the Senegalese style. I was given a Senegalese name by my family. I was called Aissatou Diallo. I answered to that name, and I spoke in a language called Poular Fouta, a sing-songy, beautifully melodic language whose greetings, even just for hello, were a series of rhythmic call and response phrases. That was my life. I did not see or talk with Americans very regularly, certainly not in my day-to-day comings and goings. I was there for 2 years and 3 months. I'm telling you all of this for context so that you can get a picture of what my life was like. Occasionally, maybe once every 3 to 6 months, I would travel 10 hours by car to get to the capital city of Dakar for whatever business that I had there. In this capital city, there was a Peace Corps house and office. Other volunteers would gather there. There were also 2 volunteers who lived in Dakar. One evening, I was there, and one of the volunteers living in the city had a party. So any Peace Corps volunteers who were in the area went. Pretty much every American Peace Corps volunteer at this party led a life similar to mine, with a hut or a simple 4-walled concrete structure to live in, barely speaking English, and on their own with their Senegalese families for months and months at a time, living within a culture that did not resemble their own. As I said, we didn't even eat with silverware, most of us. When we went to the city, though, Dakar, we wore fresh clothes, and there was ice cream and cheese and cold drinks, all of which were really treats for us. This was years before I would discover that I was empathic. I was already empathic, of course. I just didn't know it. When this particular party occurred, I was within what I would refer to as the sweet spot of my Peace Corps experience. It was my 2nd year of service. I was totally at home within the culture that I lived in. I had long time since completely acclimated to the weather. I remember one time during the dry season putting on jeans and thinking, wow, it's not that hot today. And then looking at my backpack keychain thermometer and seeing that it was 110 degrees in the sun. At this moment in time, I was also probably within 6 months of my leaving Senegal when the party occurred. So there's a way in which you also start looking to home during that time and having even more appreciation for the special slice of life that you now live. Even though just the day before this party, I had been in my home in the Casamance region of Senegal and I had been feeling great. When I walked into the party, I suddenly felt so awkward. Worse yet, I felt boring and uninteresting, like everyone around me was more glamorous than me, which makes me laugh a little bit when I think of it because truly none of us were glamorous. But compared to our dusty village lives, some Western-style clothes, clean, beers on a beautiful city balcony just felt so sophisticated. I was so uncomfortable. Looking around me and seeing everyone else speaking English, doing all of these things that now seemed really foreign and seemingly effortlessly they were doing it, I felt so out of place. I felt like I was such a dullard and could have nothing to offer these people in conversation. I didn't know what to say. Small talk in English was so far out of the world that I had been living in that it felt distant to me, strange and unattainable. And yet, there I was. I didn't want to turn around and leave. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to drink cocktails in clean clothes and sit on an actual couch. After sitting on the couch for a bit and trying to look and or feel sophisticated, I finally went to the bathroom, which was not a hole in the ground, but an actual room with an actual toilet and toilet paper. I went in there to escape because I didn't know what else to do. But while in there, I ended up having a little heart-to-heart with myself that I have not ever forgotten. Why am I feeling this way? I asked myself. This is crazy. Just yesterday, I felt fine, really happy even, loving my life and who I was in it. I felt like an interesting person, one with worthwhile thoughts. I finally came to the conclusion that even though I didn't know why this was happening, it didn't add up. Yesterday, not even 24 hours earlier, I was an interesting person with lots of interests, enjoying a vibrant life in Senegal. Today, I'm a schmuck without a word to say. It can't be. So I stood there in that tiny bathroom, thinking about a moment the day before when I had felt great. Then I asked myself, well, what did you like about yourself yesterday? And I started to list the ideas in my head, the things that I thought were interesting about me, the things that I liked to do or was good at or enjoyed. I firmly reminded myself that all of these things were still true and that I should go out there and be the interesting person I was. And that furthermore, each person here was also interesting with complex thoughts and interests and experiences, and that I would probably enjoy hearing about it if I could just stop thinking about how uncool I was. That talk with myself changed the party for me. I can't say that it was the best party of my life, but as you can tell, it was definitely memorable. But I can say that I enjoyed myself in it afterward. I'm telling you this story because it took place years before I understood that I was empathic and that what being empathic is that you are picking up on the feelings of everyone else around you too. That experience was excruciating for me because I was standing in a room full of Peace Corps volunteers who were, for the most part, also wildly out of the element of huts and wells and holes for bathrooms that had become their lives. I wouldn't hesitate to guess that 90 to 95% of those 20-somethings in that room were also feeling some form of awkward inside. But looking chic, chic for us anyway, I wasn't just wallowing in my own awkwardness. That for sure existed. But through my body was coursing the awkward, out-of-place feelings of everyone there. Last week, I think my guest Tammy Brockway Joyce touched on this a little bit. The way that once you realize you are empathic, when you look back over the story of your life, over many experiences, is shed a whole new light. In any case, I made it through. And my bathroom talk to self that arose out of a moment of desperation is still one I use and recommend to others when you are in a moment where you are feeling awkward or uninteresting or like everyone else around you must be cooler than you. Make a list in your head of all the things that you like about you. Even if no one else around you knows those things, nor ever will, they are still true. Then you get to act from that place of knowing what you value about yourself. This week, with Thanksgiving just 2 days away and us entering fully into the holiday season, one in which I might add, due to the last 2 pandemic years, is likely to be a bit like going from living alone in a hut with a hole in your backyard to being at a party with sparkly clothes, people, and a bathroom with a mirror, a sink, and a toilet in it. Just kidding. I mean, kind of. But yes, I also think it's a true analogy. Okay, so in any case, the holidays. Here we come. Because of our innate and always on ability to tune into and play back through our own skin, the feelings in the room, air, surrounds, it can be a tricky and intense time of year for an empath. Last year, I had an empathic student who had just completed all of my programs tell me that she had just discovered, now that she uses all the tools I teach, that she did not actually hate Christmas. Her whole life, she thought she did. With the tools to control her empathic ability and not constantly pick up all the emotional sensations around her, she realized that for the first, or I should say for the last 30 plus years, she had simply been awash in the feelings and stresses of those around her at this time of year. With inflation, continuous political struggles, and social cultural shock afoot, this might feel like a sticky holiday season for many. So, let's talk about what you need to know, empaths. First, let me say, if you are listening on the radio and you just tuned in to Voice of Vashon, this is Aimée Cartier and you are listening to the Own Your Intuition show. Today, we are talking about holiday support for empaths. When I teach in my longer empath programs, I teach a class called 2 Important Rules and What to Do About Them. These 2 rules, as I call them, are ones in which I wish every empath knew, because knowing them and what to do about them can absolutely change your life for the better. What are the rules, you ask? Number 1, you can never process someone else's stuff for them, ever. That means no matter how deeply you feel it in your own skin, you are not the place from where needs to reside the action. In that story I told you, I absolutely could not shift the awkward feelings of every person in that room. It just wasn't possible because their emotions didn't stem from me. They were only moving through me. They didn't originate in my body. Therefore, there was no action point for me. I could, however, do something about my own feelings, and that I did. Maybe another way to look at it is this. That evening at the party, all those years ago, no matter how much attention someone else had paid to me or what conversations would have unfolded, I would have still been having this internal, "My God, I am so uncool," discomfort and dialogue within myself until I shifted it. Only I could shift that. When it comes to other people's feelings moving through your body, even if they are coursing through you, you are just a witness. You can never process another person's emotions for them because they don't originate in you. A few summers ago, I was teaching some new friends how to knit. One of them was an 11-year-old girl. She was having a hard time, and so I was going slowly over a few of the steps for her. As I was doing so, sitting next to her, I suddenly felt really overwhelmed in my own skin. I had all of these feelings of, "I'm not sure I like knitting. This is so hard. Ugh, I just don't get this." That's when I had to do a double take and check in with myself. Do I like knitting? Yes. Is teaching this overwhelming me? No. I was picking up her emotions, and as frequently happens for an empath, they started broadcasting on my own station. So I did my core empath tools, the ones that I teach in my longer programs and my on-demand core empath tools program, which, by the way, is available now. And I'll put a link in the show notes. Then I amplified my own energy. I cleared my energy. I set an energetic boundary so that I had space to feel me, just me, not me and her at the same time as I had been feeling. Then, knowing that she was having a hard time with this, I purposely chose to sink into my own true feelings. I connected with my own confidence in knitting and my love of it. I allowed myself to feel how much I loved knitting and being in this moment with her. I thought and felt about how confident I felt that she could get it. I didn't say a thing to her about any of this. I just concentrated on and felt these true feelings of mine in my own body. And you know what? Two things happened. One, she did get it. And two, her mom came up and thanked me afterward. She told me about a particular challenge that her daughter faces and said, "Thank you so much for not trying to make her feel better, because usually this just shuts her down. And for just being patient and loving with her instead of trying to get into how she was feeling or take it personally and trying to fix it." I didn't try to change this little girl's feelings. I didn't purposely manipulate them or even in this case comment on it or offer suggestions or encouragement. I just engaged my own feelings of my love and my confidence in myself and in her. Period. You cannot process someone else's stuff for them. That's rule number one. I couldn't have shifted her feelings if I had tried. When appropriate, like in this example, you can act as a buoy, and you do so by focusing on your own feelings, which can prepare a life raft of emotion, so to speak, should it be useful for another to vibe off of it. Whether they do or not is not your business. It is their choice. This brings us naturally to rule number two. Just because you can feel everything does not mean that you are meant to have a hand in transforming it. Sometimes you do, other times you don't. This is so vital for empaths to understand because we feel everything. I've noticed over the years that I've been teaching empaths that it's most common for an empathic being to equate being aware of a problem, challenge, or negative feeling with thinking that they need to fix it, especially for those we love. We want to help. So we end up being the peacemakers, the volunteers for everything, the champions of the underdogs, the say yesers, the overgivers, as I like to call empaths. Does any of this sound familiar? Remember when I said a couple of episodes ago that my stepmom once told me that she referred to me as the get-along gal? Hearing her say that was so revealing. I knew exactly what she was talking about. For years and years while I was growing up, that was the role I played within my family. I wanted everybody to get along, yes. But here's the empathic secret. I also really wanted any tension to ease because I can feel it in my own skin. It is infrequently noted, but I think worth understanding that our empathic tendency to overhelp is not always so selfless as it seems. Of course, we do want to help. Our understanding of the suffering of others gives us this propensity to want to ease it. And it's also very real that we want and need to make ourselves feel better. Growing up, I had no idea or skills for stopping whatever tension was in the air from being under my skin, other than to try to solve the problem myself. Back then, I also didn't have the level of comfort with emotions and the skills to know how to experience them healthily, which I do now as an adult. So I just tried to solve all the things. Make everyone happy. Do the thing that would soothe the scene. As an empathic being, chances are very high that you have done this too. So let's get back to this fact. Commonly, empaths fall into the habit of overcommitting and exceeding our natural and rightful boundaries for the sake of helping others solve their problems. As a result, empaths frequently end up feeling overcommitted and burned out because we think that every problem we feel is ours to solve. The other extreme I've seen is empaths who feel like they have to hide away to avoid doing this, or in order to recuperate from having overhelped everyone else. I am here to tell you right now that you don't have to fall into either one of these extremes. You can also get out of them if you are in them. I've had so many students do so by using the tools I teach. Ones that, incidentally, as I mentioned, are available on my on-demand Empath Core Tools program. I want you to know that it is absolutely possible to live in the world as an empathic being without having to A, get burned out by trying to solve all of the things or feel guilty for not solving all of the things, or B, having to hide away. It is important for you to know that it is physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually impossible for you to solve all of the challenges that you come across, and that thinking you need to do so or trying to do will harm you and possibly others. Simply put, you cannot solve all the things. None of us can. And acting as though you do can seriously undermine the quality of your life and, in some cases, your health. I also want to acknowledge here that there are many of us empathic beings who feel we are born to serve others, I am one such person. There are good fights to champion, and people, animals, or places that do need and deserve our help in the world, your loved ones, and those in the world at large. However, that still doesn't mean that you are meant to spearhead every campaign or even have a hand in each one that pricks your insides. So, let me repeat this important second rule. Just because you can feel everything does not necessarily mean you have a hand in helping to transform it. Equally important to note is that not shifting or solving a situation or feeling for someone else does not mean you don't care. In fact, it can mean the opposite. I think of it more like a, honey, you've got this. You don't need me to solve this for you. Cheer. If you remember, it's something that Tammy mentioned last week that was useful for her. When you give someone else the freedom to experience and process their own emotions, challenges, you are effectively saying, you've got this. I believe in you. You can. That is powerful medicine. It's so powerful. Let me tell you another story. Once I was driving in the car with my two young children back from the Olympia area, which is about a 45-minute drive to the ferry that I needed to catch to come home. There was an accident on the road ahead of me somewhere. So what could have been a quickish trip was a nightmare length. And it became excruciating about 20 minutes in because my daughter began to cry to be nursed in the back seat. I was the only adult in the car and obviously at the wheel. My kids were obviously very small. After a while, I started to lose it. My body and my being were so stressed out by my daughter's crying. And as the minutes ticked by and my son was then upset too, I felt trapped because I couldn't just pull over, get her out of the car and nurse her. We were totally gridlocked. There was nowhere to pull over, but we were also moving occasionally enough that I couldn't actually put the car in park and get her out of the seat, even if I had wanted to. As it was, I could barely reach her to touch her. She was so tiny, so there was no reassuring her. There was no reasoning with her. I tried everything. Singing to them, deep breaths, everything. And somewhere in this hour and a half experience, I just lost it internally. I thought, I need help. This is crazy. The kids won't stop crying and I'm trapped and I'm being wound up more by her being upset. It makes me so sad. So I reached for my phone and I dialed my girlfriend, Renee. Renee's kids are a few years older than mine and she also has two, so she knows how complicated that can sometimes be. She answered, thankfully. I said, help, I am stuck in hell. And at probably a fevered pitch, I explained the situation to her over the crying of my children in the back seat. Her response, with gusto, she exclaimed into the phone, effing kids. It was just the response I needed. It broke my emotional turmoil and I started to laugh at the absurdity of all of it, at the helplessness of it all, at the moment. I was unstuck from my personal hell and was able to see the bigger picture. Important in this moment is that Renee did not say, oh, you poor thing. She definitely followed her statement up with something like, that so sucks, I'm so sorry. But she didn't ever try to save me. She just made a joke and acknowledged how sucko the whole thing was.
And that alone was enough to diffuse me and get me back to my center. Now, I know in this situation, there was nothing she actually could have done. She was miles away in Port Townsend, Washington, and I was stuck on the highway somewhere just outside of Olympia. But what is more important about this story is her attitude. Nothing about the conversation suggested, "You can't handle this, Aimé." In fact, it was just the opposite. Instead of going down the rabbit hole with me or implying that I couldn't do it by offering to save me, she exuded a completely different emotion, which floated me a life vest. Should I choose to take it? I did. She did not try to solve or troubleshoot the problem for me. She rightly believed in my capacity and likely assumed that I had tried all the things. She did not attempt to save me in any way. When you offer to save someone, you are saying to them energetically, "You poor thing, you can't handle this. You are weak. You have no power. Here, let me do it for you. I'll take over." I'm not saying there aren't times when it is your place to help. There absolutely are times when it is your place to help. But I am suggesting that offering help when it is not your place can be more damaging than you might think. I remember the story of one of my students. Her sister experiences bouts of depression. So after learning these tools and learning to check in with herself each time, instead of just automatically trying to save, but checking into herself to see if it was her place to help in that situation, one day her sister called her in a state of upheaval. Instead of just offering to help or making suggestions or taking whatever pain she could away from her sister, as she usually did, when her sister called, she checked in with herself and she found that in this case today, at that time, it wasn't her place to help. So instead of trying to solve, she just listened. She acknowledged the hard place her sister was in, but she didn't make suggestions. The next time her sister called her sister was like, "Oh, I found this great XYZ." I can't actually remember what it was anymore that her sister found in that moment, whether it was a great acupuncturist or a tool or a great session with her therapist. Whatever it was, her sister had solved her own issue and she was empowered by it. This is Aimé Cartier, and you are listening to the Own Your Intuition show. Today, we are talking about tools and rules for empaths to remember during the holiday season. Heck, let's be honest, these aren't just tools for the holiday. They are rules for life. So, I don't want to go any farther without acknowledging that it absolutely can be difficult to sit through the pain of someone you love. So, I'd like you to remember here that sometimes the balm is in being heard. Like my story with Renee, it helped me so much to say to another human being that I knew would understand, "Oh my God, this is so crazy hard." Okay, so if you want tools that will allow you to not constantly run everyone else's emotions through your own skin, empath, then it's time to check out my on-demand program. However, either way, remember the two rules. One, you can never process someone else's stuff for them, ever. Number two, just because you can feel everything does not mean that you are meant to have a hand in transforming everything.
So put those in your pocket as you navigate this holiday season and beyond. Become discerning about when you help. Don't assume that because there is a need or a challenge being experienced, that it is your job to solve it, stat. And just for the record, even if you discover that it is not your place to help, prayers and well wishes are always welcome. Say a prayer, light a candle for that person you love, ask their guides, which is something I talk about in episode 11, by the way. Ask their guides to send them as speedily as possible whatever goodness and healing is in your beloved's highest good. Prayers and well wishes do not ever hurt. I hope you have a warm and satisfying holiday season, inside and out. Next week, we'll be exploring ideas for diving into your own mystical knowing and making the most of this dark and luscious season. This is Aimee Cartier, and you have been listening to the Own Your Intuition Show. I am so glad you were here. I hope you got some gems to consider from what you heard today. If you know somebody who is empathic, I ask you to consider sending them this episode and the previous two. If you are ready for the tools that help you avoid feeling debilitated by your empathic nature and feeling empowered instead, I invite you to check out aimeecartier.com/ECT. That stands for Empath Core Tools. aimeecartier.com/ECT. I've also got some free downloads for you on my website, including my 44 Signs You're an Empath and a new audio and PDF called Empath: How to Tell If What You Feel Belongs to You. Just go to aimeecartier.com/IMNEmpath for all the details. I'll put a link in the show notes too. See you soon.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.